Good morning. Welcome and thank you all for coming here today to share the Dharma together. And welcome to our guests. When we meet on Sunday mornings outside of Sesshin, the Taishos are a little different from the ones in Sesshin. They're all presentations of the truth as near as can be done in words. And they are very often commentaries on one of the koans, which we study in our curriculum here. The koans being the record of the sayings and doings of the great masters, mostly those of Tang Dynasty China. And while these koans seem to be illogical conundrums, when seen with a truly open eye, they are perfectly logical and perfectly open. And it is our job as Zen students to see these koans clearly to where the conundrum disappears. Koans are... We work with various classical collections of these koans. There's probably about 550 or so that we work on when we go through the entire curriculum that was developed by Harada Roshi. In listening to a Taisho about anything, whether it's on a koan or not, please... don't listen in the usual way. Listen to it the way you would listen to the wind in the trees, the sound of the ocean, which is to say, just listen. Don't try to judge. Don't try to approve or disapprove. And don't even try to understand in an intellectual sort of way. Just let it flow through you like the wind. During these Taishos, it's perfectly okay to shift your position if you wish, but at all times do keep the back straight and the head up. And of course, shift your position very quietly and unobtrusively. For the Taisho this morning, we tried to find one that was at least somewhat applicable to life outside of a monastery. The Zen masters of old were mostly monastics with very few exceptions. And of course, they were talking and interacting with other monks. Our situation here is quite different. This is a lay center. And everyone here, including the teachers, live in the world and outside of the protective atmosphere of a monastery. So, this morning we will look at a koan from the Wu Men Guan, that is the no-gate barrier, the gateless barrier, compiled by Master Wu Men in around the 12th or 13th century. Actually, I guess it was closer to the 10th century. Wu Men collected 48 cases. They're called cases. The word koan in Japanese comes from the word kung an in Chinese, which means a public case, rather like a precedent in case law. And so Master Wu Men collected about 48 of these, and he presents the case, and then he wrote a commentary to go with each one, and then he included also a verse to further explicate the case. So this morning we will work on the case number 20 in the Wu Men Guan, a person of great strength. The case reads, Master Sung Yen said, why can't the person of great strength lift up a leg? Again he said, it is not with the tongue that such a person speaks. the Wu Men's commentary. Sun Yin certainly emptied his intestines and turned out his guts, yet no one understands him. Yet even if someone could immediately acknowledge him, I would give him a hard blow with my stick if he came to me. Why? Look, if you want to know pure gold, you must perceive it in the midst of fire. In Wu Men's verse, lifting up my leg, I kick up the scented ocean. Lowering my head, I look down on the four Dhyana heavens. My body is so big there is no place to put it. Please add the final line here. Sun Yin, whose dates are 1131 to 1202, was a Dharma descendant of Lin Ji. He lived during the late Sung period in China and was a slightly older contemporary of Wu Men, although I don't know if they ever met. He is the direct Dharma ancestor of the Rinzai sect in Japan, and therefore of our lineage as well. The three turning words of Sun Yin are found in our collection of introductory koans, so there are many people here who have worked on them. The third turning word, which is not part of this koan, is, why can't even a clear-eyed person, i.e. a highly developed person, cut the vermilion thread that runs beneath our feet? The vermilion thread is usually interpreted to refer to worldly attachments, particularly sexual desire. Master Sun Yin said, why can't a person of great strength lift up a leg? Again he said, it is not with the tongue that such a person speaks. So who is this person of great strength? An Olympic powerlifter, an NFL lineman. I suspect that most of us know here that the person of great strength is one who is deeply realized. A bodhisattva, a master, a Buddha. But why can't such a person lift up a leg? Why does Bodhidharma have no beard? Once again, we are faced with a contradiction. Sun Yin presents a razor's edge, and you have to walk it without falling off to either side, into names and forms on one side, or an empty void on the other. Most of us have legs, and we can lift them, move them. We walk, we run, we climb stairs and mountains. We ski or snowboard. We ride bicycles. And of course, we all bend our legs and do zazen. We also, most of us, have arms, hands, feet. We use them to do all sorts of things. But Sun Yin wants to know why this person of great strength cannot lift a leg or an arm or a hand. Case number 42 in the Wu Men Guan reads in part, once Manjushri went to a place where many Buddhas had assembled with the world-honored one. When he arrived, all the Buddhas had returned to their original dwelling place. Only a young woman remained, seated in samadhi near the Buddha's seat. Manjushri addressed the Buddha and asked, how can the young woman get near the Buddha's seat when I cannot? Manjushri, the Bodhisattva Mahasattvas, the teacher of the seven Buddhas, cannot get near the Buddha's seat. Would he be able to lift his leg? In case number 40 in the Wu Men Guan, Gui Shan kicks over a water bottle. Does he lift his leg? And then Dogen writes, because green mountains walk, they are permanent. although they walk more swiftly than the wind, someone in the mountains does not realize or understand it. If you doubt mountains walking, you do not know your own walking." He goes on for quite a bit in this vein. So, green mountains walk. Do they have legs? Do they lift them? What is going on here? Those who have attended a 7-day session, or maybe even just a weekend session, might have noticed something about Samu, the work period. As the days of session go by, everything begins to happen effortlessly. You find yourself gliding through tasks with no more resistance, none whatever, like a fish gliding through clear water. Your body, your arms and legs just do everything by themselves. Nothing controls them. Nothing needs to. This is what happens when we get out of our own way. But then session is over. We go back to our lives in the world, and gradually or suddenly, that wonderful, effortless feeling fades. Is this bad? Have we fallen from grace? Have we been expelled from Eden? No. It's just that certain illusions and delusions reestablish themselves to some extent. And that's inevitable. A somewhat similar feeling is experienced by athletes when they are in the zone, when it's all working perfectly. You might have what someone once called a John Wayne day, a game or a tournament where you can literally do no wrong. But such experiences are temporary and fleeting. There is no practice here, no transformation at the core of one's being. I've met practitioners of karate or aikido or other martial arts who insist that theirs is a spiritual pursuit. Permit me to doubt. I have yet to see a genuine spiritual awakening occur as the byproduct of a pursuit of a championship or of excellence in a physical skill. While the discipline that one learns in athletics or sports training may be applicable to Zen practice, such endeavors are ego-driven and ego-reinforcing. Why can't the person of great strength lift up a leg? I lift my leg. Certain muscles contract and cause certain bones to move at certain joints. Certain proteins in the muscle interact to cause the contraction. Chemicals are released at nerve endings to cause these proteins to interact. Electrochemical signals travel down the spinal cord and through the peripheral nerves to cause the release of chemicals at the nerve endings. You can tell what I majored in college, right? I could go on and on about that stuff. And it may well be true, based on massive scientific evidence. But of what use is all that to a dancer in the midst of a leap, or to a fencer in the heat of combat, or to a musician playing a Beethoven sonata, or to an old man or woman making their way across the street? But can we ignore such knowledge? It could be very important if one has Parkinson's disease, or a degenerative muscle condition, or a bullet wound. Sometimes one has to have a leg and lift it. Paradoxically, we don't have a leg. We don't lift our leg until something goes wrong with it. Then suddenly, we have a leg. If I am walking along, enjoying the day and admiring the gardens I pass in the neighborhood, I have no legs. If My knee pops painfully. Suddenly, I have legs. As we get older, we tend to have more and more of a body. Some of us, especially those who may have participated seriously in some competitive sport or other intense physical activity, have great difficulty facing the decline of our physical powers. Actually, it's up to each of us. One can say that an athlete running a 100-meter dash has no legs. A paraplegic has legs. But is this necessarily the case? We come back to the question about whether this koan is about a physical skill or ability. If I walk with a limp, I just walk with a limp. If I use a wheelchair, I just use a wheelchair. But it is only through practice and realization that you can truly lose your legs, your body, yourself. There's an old movie entitled King's Row, which has become something of a camp classic because it stars a very young Ronald Reagan. In it, a young man is injured in a rail yard accident, and he is taken to the hospital. A villainous, evil surgeon unnecessarily amputates both his legs. The young man wakes up in the hospital, and seeing that his legs are missing, cries out that famous line, "Where's the rest of me?" He is devastated. He becomes an embittered recluse, refusing even to leave his bed. In that condition, he still has legs. By the end of the movie, with the help of a friend, he regains his determination to get up and live his life. He is beginning to lose his legs. Again, he said, "It is not with the tongue that such a person speaks." There are three cases in a row in the Hekkagan Roku. That's the Blue Cliff Record, another collection of koans, in which Baijiang asks three of his students, "With your mouth and lips closed, how would you speak?" Gui Shan answered, "Let's see you do that." Not bad. Wu Feng answers, "Teacher, shouldn't you keep your own mouth closed?" Yun Yan answered, "Teacher, do you have any way to do that or not? So tell me, which of these three opened his mouth and lips and which did not?" Does an opera singer in the midst of an aria open the mouth and use the tongue? When a fish pumps water through the gill slits, is it opening its mouth? Does a child just learning to walk have legs? Wu Min's commentary. Sun Yan certainly emptied his intestines and turned out his guts. Yet no one understands him. Yet even if someone could immediately acknowledge him, I would give him a good hard blow with my stick if he came to me. Why? Look, if you want to know pure gold, you must perceive it in the midst of fire. Wu Man likes these extreme metaphors. But if we speak of someone spilling his guts, we hear that, don't we? Letting it all out, nothing held back. Yun Men says, "Shit stick!" Did he leave anything out? Yet no one understands him. Who can understand him, and how can you tell? We are told that Sun Yan died without naming a Dharma heir, for no one was able to answer his turning words. To say that a person of great strength cannot lift a leg is not a denial, any more to say that Bodhidharma has no beard. As with all koans, this is an expression of liberation. But how that liberation manifests is up to each one of us. Yan Wu, the commentator on the Blue Cliff Record, never tires of saying that we are born together, but we do not die together. Yes, we are all Buddha, empty of any enduring self, And yet, that no self manifests in infinite variety. Yet even if someone could immediately acknowledge him, I would give him a hard blow with my stick if he came to me. Why? Look, if you want to know pure gold, you must perceive it in the midst of fire. Immediately acknowledge him. If he says, I have seen emptiness, give him a blow. See what's really there. And again, let me quote from my favorite Buddhist scripture, the book Zen Flesh, Zen Bones by Nyogen Senzaki and Paul Retz. This story is called Nothing Exists. Yameoka Teshu, as a young student of Zen, visited one master after another. He called upon Dokuan of Shokoku. Desiring to show his attainment, he said, the mind, Buddha, and sentient beings, after all, do not exist. The true nature of phenomena is emptiness. There is no realization, no delusion, no sage, no mediocrity. There is no giving and nothing to be received. Dokuan, who was smoking quietly, said nothing. Suddenly, he whacked Yamaoka with his bamboo pipe. This made the youth quite angry. If nothing exists, inquired Dokuan, where did this anger come from? Yeah. You can't tell if it's real gold or fool's gold until you see it in the furnace. I can sit here and shoot my mouth off until the end of the kalpa, and it means nothing. It is only in the midst of the flame, in our lives in the world, that our realization is put to the proof. This is by far the most difficult aspect of our practice. When we are away from the supportive atmosphere of the Sangha, away from the beautiful environment of this temple, out where nothing is controlled, or more accurately, where it is much more difficult to maintain the illusion of control. That is where our gold is tested. And it is tested again and again through all the joys, sorrows, disappointments, and disasters in a lifetime of practice. And of course, that's the point. Is it a lifetime of practice? The furnace not only tests the gold, it purifies it. And the two processes are not separate. Wu Min's verse. Lifting up my leg, I kick up the scented ocean. Lowering my head, I look down on the four dhyana heavens. My body is so big, there is no place to put it. Please add the final line here. Kicking up the scented ocean, looking down on the dhyana heavens, in providing us with a picture of the person of great strength, Wu Min shows a grandmotherly kindness. This very body, the body of Buddha, says Hakuin. Yes, how could you put it anywhere? How can you move without kicking up the great ocean of reality? Where will you hide the universe? But as Robert Aitken Roshi points out, we have to be careful of such grandiose metaphors. They may not be sustainable. Layman Pong said, my miracle is cutting firewood and drawing water. That too is a person of great strength. Please add the final line here. When we have truly lost our legs and our tongue, not just in the Doksan room, not just in the Zendo, but in our lives, we are adding a final line at every moment. But I'll go ahead and add a capping verse. In front of an old temple, a dog is pissing to the sky. Does he lift his leg? Together with all beings, we realize the way.